Rabun le day mach silver. Now I've got to show you where that is in the Torah. It is in the Gorim, in Parshas Ra'eli. In Parshas Ra'eli, I'll just read to you chapter. It's chapter 15 in the Gorim, in the Gorim. So when you get a chance to look at it, it's good. When there is amongst you Evyon, a poor person, may Achad Achecho, one of your brethren, the Achad Shorecho, in one of your cities or towns or villages, the Arzacho in your land, Asher Hashem Elokecho Nimsein Loch, which the Lord your God gives you. Now, why it says in your land which the Lord your God gives you doesn't mean only in Eretz Yisrael and not otherwise. Because it's before they go out into Eretz Yisrael. When they come into Eretz Yisrael, everybody's got land in Eretz Yisrael, because all those who went out of Egypt were given land in Eretz Yisrael. What do you mean you haven't got anything? So you might come to the stage where you'll be alienated one from another. You be careful of that. In your own land, where everybody is gone, there can still be a poor person. Then, Losa Ametis Lebobochon, don't harden your heart. Velosi Totsis Yodacho, and don't close your hand. Don't clench your fist. May your chicho have gone from your needy brother. Kifo soach tiftachis Yodacho lo, but you shall surely open your hand to him. Vaha aveta avitenu, or, I'm translating it, or you shall lend. Day machsoda. Day machsoda comes from the word dayenu, day. Day machsoda. Enough for that which is wanting. Got it? Asher yechsalo, which is lacking. So give him enough to cover that for that which is lacking. That is the day machsoda. Now, it says, Tonu Rabbonon, Rabbonon learned, Dei Machsoda, these words, Ato Metsuve Olov Lefarneso, you are commanded to feed him, to sustain him, Ve'i Ato Metsuve Olov Le'oshro, but you are not obliged to make him rich. That you're not obliged to give the money that he can put away into the savings bank. That you're not obliged to do. You're not obliged to give him money that he can buy a house. That you're not obliged to do. You follow, to make him rich, to give him a capital, to give him a principal, that you're not allowed to do. It's day matzora, enough for that which he needs, for which he's wanting. That's the first thing. But it says, Dei Masoro Asher Yechsalo, which is lacking for him. So which is lacking for him means it must, you see that nothing is lacking. So what does that mean? Afilu sus lirko volov, the eved rovutz lefono. Even if it means a horse to ride on and a slave to run before him. That means that he was a rich man once. And when he was a rich man, he had a horse. And not only did he have a horse, but a slave went in front of him to do anything that he had to do, to collect his, to pick up his parcels, and carry his thing to it, go in here, fetch his post, his mail, I'm sorry, that is what he had to do. Now, Afilu Susi may ever love his Omru Olov al Hillel HaZoke. They said about Hillel HaZoke. That's the first Hillel, the great Hillel. Shelokach lo oni ben telvin echod. Sus lirkev olov ve'emed rorutzafonov. That he himself bought for a poor man a ben telvin. That means a poor man of a noble family. That means he's fallen on evil days. This is a man who was rich. That is what he was accustomed to. And now he hasn't got it. Sus Lirka will not be ever grown for him. He's got for him a horse to ride on and a slave to run before him. Palm achas, no more so ever lorutz leponov. It happened once that he couldn't find a slave to run before him. The rotz leponov shloshemili. And Hillel himself went 3 miles, walked 3 miles in front of him, which is unheard of. Doesn't sound right.
It doesn't jive with the story of Nachum and Ben Gurion.
Of course not. With a lot of things, it doesn't. With a lot of things.
What do you mean 3 miles?
3 miles.
I mean, what do you mean he went 3 miles in front of him?
Hillel, he couldn't find a slave for him. And this man was accustomed to ride on a horse and have a slave came for him. So got him a horse, and Hillel couldn't find a slave to go.
Right.
So Hillel went himself. He had to go from Venice to Palisades through Santa Monica, 3 miles away. So Hillel went in front of his horse.
Oh, I see. Okay.
He did. He acted the slave.
Doesn't sound right at all.
Of course not. So we've got to understand what it's about. Let's understand. Yes, George.
How is the whole concept of a slave possible in a system or society where so much emphasis is placed on human dignity?
No. There are several types of slaves. Several types of slaves. There was the lowest form of slave was a Canaanite slave. Well, who was the Canaanite slave? The Canaanite slave was a slave who either came to the Jew and sold himself to the Jew, or his owner sold him to a Jew. You follow? He had another owner, Canaanite had him as a slave, and he sold him to a Jew. So he becomes. The first thing he does when he becomes to a Jew has got to be circumcised.
He's a
slave. The next thing is, he's got to keep Shabbos, and he's got to keep Yom Tov, and he's got to eat kosher. And he works. You can imagine what kind of a person he is. Righty can't. Really can't. He is completely illiterate. Skilled, if he's skilled, then he's a very, then he wouldn't run in front of the horse if he's skilled. His owner wouldn't use him for that, to keep errands. So it's a very low type of, but, and if he's given his freedom, he becomes a food Jew. But during, and he eats at the table. And he's treated just like a member of the family. He's got the same obligations as women have. You follow? That is the Canaanite slave. A Jewish slave is altogether a different story. There he's got to treat him. There if he's got a Jewish slave and he's got one pillow, he's got to give it to the slave. He can't take it for himself. There he's got other laws. You follow?
I understand that, and I think I've heard these things, but
yes.
It's still a little difficult for me to accept the whole concept of ownership of a person, another person.
Is it slavery or is it service? Like a servant?
You see, it's not really slavery in the sense. He can't do with the person as he wants to do the thing.
No, I understand. But does the other have the right to pick up and leave?
No. Because you've got to view it in the sense that his labor, he's paid for his labor.
Isn't it the same as an indentured servant, where after like 7 years the guy is free?
No, that's a Jewish slave. If he's that type of slave, then he's a slave. He's a slave for always. He's a slave for always. But it's got to be, don't forget who the Canaanites were. They were the people who occupied the land, and we were not to have any dealings with them at all. They were to leave the land. He comes and he wants to be a slave. But I want to tell you that to be a slave in those days to a Jew was a privilege. He would much rather be a slave because he was protected there. He was protected. Where I live in San Jose, they told me that a mafia man lives just next door, not just behind me. Mafia man.
They wanted to bring him around to introduce him to us, that he'd do nothing of the kind. Nothing of the kind. They said, you don't know what it means to have a mafia man there. I said, was it me? He said, you're safe. You don't have any crime there. You don't have to worry. So, I'm very pleased. I'm very pleased he's living there. Good, but he lives there. But it was a privilege, Lahavdi. But for a Jew, it was a privilege. I want to tell you, it goes even further. I got a young man who was at his, today he's my age, studied together with me in Yeshiva. He was from Switzerland. Hadn't seen him for, I don't know how many years. One day my wife and I were in Zurich in the restaurant, we came to a restaurant there, and my wife says to me, that lady's got a most remarkable shape. I've never seen a shape like that. I said, we'll go and ask her from where she got it. She said, do you think I can do it? I said, of course you can. I mean, of course you can do that. Anyway, eventually she plucked up courage, and she went across to her, and she started speaking. I was left out in the cold, and her husband was left out in the cold, so I got up, and he got up, and I looked at him, I said, good, because I said, I know you. And he looked at me, and we both recognized that he's one, and he lived together, Yeshiva. We became very great friends. And he had his whole family, then he used this daughter's just become a color. I said, and she spoke very good English. I said, where did you learn English? She said, I was an au pair in London. Now, this is a Balabatisha family. You know, Brandis. In fact, when I came from Kelsch during the war on my way back to South Africa, I was in Zurich. And they entertained me. I was, you know, what the father and the mother, I mean, they were aristocrats, this family. His daughter was an au pair in London. You know what an au pair in London means? An au pair in London is that you write to an agency, a girl writes to an agency in London, and she gets, I mean, we treat our servants in South Africa not better than the au pair is treated. 10 times better. We would never treat an au pair the way they treat her in London. She works, she's got her room in the house, she gets food, she gets hardly any money. She does the bed, she does the housework, she looks after the children, she babysits. And at night, Kamatora, she gets away for 2 hours to go to a night school to learn English. They exploit her, you see. She can't get into the country otherwise and all that, and she gets to learn English. Of course they exploit her. They pay about $12 a month, $20 a month. That's all they pay. See, I mean, we would never treat our service like that. But in England, it's all right. That is the way they treat it. So he tells me, his daughter, where did you learn English? She was an au pair. Good heavens, Elchana, to your daughter an au pair in London? He said, you must ask where she was an au pair. He said, where was she? He said, Goodman's in North London. It's a different story altogether. There's a privilege to be an au pair there. Goodman's in North London. Well, it's a different story. So that's where she was an au pair. But she helped in the house. It's the name of a family. What if not a family? It's a family. It's the name of a family, you see. But it's a very fine Torah family. And I know if they had her, how they treated her. And that is where she was. She was no pair there. Fine. It's a different story altogether. So it depends, you see. This type of slavery came into a decent Jewish home. He was only too happy to be there. He had security. He wasn't anybody's game with his life or whatever it was. You know, you should understand something. You had the slavery here in wasn't that type of slavery? But a Jewish labor court got altogether a different treatment. You follow that? That's the way it works. But still the whole thing doesn't square here by any means. But we're nowhere near that. We've got to understand this piece of Gemara. So, this is what the Gemara does. The Gemara says, it says in the Torah, you shall surely open your hand to him or lend him day machsoro, enough day machsoro, enough for his needs. Asher yechsar lo, which is lacking for him. Which is lacking for him.
Redundancy.
Oh, pardon?
It's a redundancy.
Of course there's a redundancy. That is why the earlier Braisa says, a little bit earlier says, that if a Yosem comes to be married, that you rent him a house, and you prepare a bed for him, and also the appurtenances, the furniture, the crockery and things. And afterwards you marry him a wife. Because it says, Dei Masoro Asher Yechsar Lo. Dei Masoro Zehabais. That which is lacking, which is a thing that a person has to have outside food. Not speaking about food. That he owns. Got to have a roof over his head. So Dei Masoro, that which is lacking, the first thing he's lacking is a house, a place. A Dei Masoro, which is lacking, zemito, the shulchan, that is a bed and a table, lo, for him, zu isho, that is a wife, because it says in the Torah, e lo ezer kenegdo, I will make for him a helpmate opposite him, as his counterpart. I will make for him. And here it says, lo for him, so it is, that is the wife. So this is the verse on which we base it. Of course it is what we call an asmachto. It is, since we know the law, we, in this verse, we find some indication of it. But we'll get that clearer a little bit later. But that is the story as it goes. So, the law is, I just want to clarify a few things here, otherwise the whole thing won't make sense to you. So the law is that we are obliged to give a man day machsoro. So if he's been accustomed to a lot more and now he's got less, then we've got to give him enough so that he, it's covered what he had before. We work on a principle. It's better never to have had than to have had and to have lost it. The worst person, the person who is worse off, is the person who is a Yoreid bin Achosov. That is, he was wealthy and now he's poor. That's the worst person. So we are very particular about that person, and there is an obligation to make good that which he had. He's now reduced to poverty to make good that which he had. Fine. So I've got to make good that which he had. It's a tall order. It's a tall order. You can say, well, if you've got it, and if I've got it, I've got to make good. So I'm giving you the view of the Shulchan Aruch, of the Yerodeya. Now you know what the Yerodeya is, yes. The second part of the Shulchan Aruch. I'm giving you the view, the view, this is the view of the Beis Yosef. Of Rabbi Yosef Kalev. And it's interesting because it's not quite the view of the Rambam, but here he differs from the Rambam in this, and this is his psak. You've got to realize that there are two obligations. And as we go through this Gemara, this becomes clear to us. The one obligation is the obligation of the individual. In addition to that, there is the obligation of the community. Now, when it says that you've got to make good what he was rich and now he's poor, that is the obligation of the community. It's not the obligation of the individual. That is the way that the Beis Yosef passes. That is the way that Yosef Karo Paskins. So we've got two obligations here. Obligation of the individual, obligation of the community. The obligation of the community is they machzoro, to give him that which he needs. I, Hillel, gave him a horse and that. Hillel went lifnei meshuras hadin. He did more than was expected of him to do. Why, we'll soon see. Now, you've got an interesting situation here.
What is the obligation of the individual?
Pardon?
What is the obligation of the individual?
The obligation that's all brought down in the Shulchan Aruch. The obligation of the individual is, it depends, you see, who the Oni is also. There are degrees in Anius. There is the type of Oni. He needs something for the time being. There is the Oni Hamazir Alapsochi. Oni Chozer Alapsochi. He goes from door to door. He's a professional. He goes from door to door. You can give him, you can, from the coffer you can give him. The din is that if he goes from door to door, from the coffer, from the communal chest, you give him only a little. Why don't you give him more? Because if you give him more, he'll still go from door to door. But you give him $100. You say, but look here, you've got enough, and you're going from door to door. He said, ah, so I'll have 153. I'll have $100.53. He works on different, you see. He gets another cent, another cent. That's a, you do. So you've got the only the poor person. He doesn't go from door to door. You find out that he hasn't got. You've got the only that's a ma'amazil al-psochim, and you've got the third degree that the Gemara speaks about, and the Dean speaks about it, and that is ha'oveyaz mi mokum le'mokum. He goes from place to place. He starts in San Diego when he comes across the border. Then he goes to Anaheim, and then he goes to Long Beach, and then he goes to Anaheim, and then he goes to Irvine, and then he comes to Venice, and then he comes to Santa Monica, and then he goes to Los Angeles, then he goes to Santa Barbara, then he goes to Monterey, then he goes to Santa Cruz, then to San Jose, then to San Francisco. And wherever he comes, he wants to have, and there's the bean, how much you give him, and of course he wants to, every community gives him a ticket to go to the next place. That he always gives. And then he gets, but this is brought in the bean, and how much you give him. It's another type of money. So you're dealing with different types of anemia. Is that clear? Different types of anemia. Yeah, we are dealing with a Yoreg Min HaChosov. It's a different type of money. He was wealthy, he hasn't got it, he's lost everything. Which is the worst type of money at all. He had and now he hasn't got. He was accustomed to big things and now he's got nothing at all. Different type of money. Yes, sir.
Just the principle you just mentioned,
yes.
And it must relate specifically to Aeneas, that it's better not to have had.
It's better never to have had than to have had and to have lost.
But we've learned, in Brachos that we've learned that to have children, better to have children and lose them than to never have children.
That was with Rabbi Yochanan.
Right.
That's a different thing. That's not with wealth, that's not with material wealth.
Okay, so it differs then.
Yes, sir.
So the aphorism that we have, better to have loved and lost than not to have loved at all.
No.
Everything's quite at odds, right? With this,
it's better for a man to have been married and not to have, and then his wife, he's lost his wife, than for a man never to be married at all. Of course it is. And that's, there's no question about that. But when it comes to material things, and those aren't, a wife and children are not material things. But when it comes to material things, it's better never to have had than to have had and to have lost.
Why is that? Why is that?
Well, yeah. Why is that? Just as an example from being a Baal Shuva, it's much harder to keep kosher if you've tasted things that are trade, which are very tasty, than it is never to have tasted them.
You see, David, if you've got material things, and the material things go away, we're left with nothing. Not left with anything. Excepting regrets that you haven't got it now. You're not left with anything. When it becomes not material things, when it becomes spiritual things, a person has had a wife. Those years that he's had a wife still mean a tremendous amount to him. He hasn't ever forgotten. It's always worth something. What he's given his children, they carry on in the Olam HaEmes. Goes on. It's a different thing. And he knows he's got it. We get people who lost everybody in them, Reb Eli Meir Katz, Reb Eli Meir Bloch. He and Reb Moshe Katz came to America at the beginning of the war. They wanted to build something in America to bring over the yeshiva from Lithuania there. Before they had a chance, the Germans moved in. Reb Moshe Katz had 9 sons and 1 daughter, a wife, 9 sons and 1 daughter. His elder son, Lazer, was a person that when the father and the son walked down the street, they used to say, there goes the father and the son, and the son knows more than the father. And it was wrong. He only found out afterwards that it was wrong. Nobody ever knew how much the father knew. They only found it out afterwards. He loses his wife and he loses his 10 children. Laid by himself. Reb Eli Meir Bloch had a wife. One of his daughters was saved. One of his daughters was saved. Others were all killed. Wife and the other, and the son, and the friend. The model cuts nobody at all. As far as the model cuts was concerned, he built up a yeshiva in Cleveland, in Wycliffe, Ohio. Built up a yeshiva. Carried on. Had married again. Had children. You think that his wife and the children had to mean anything to him. His son, Lazar, whom people used to think knew much more than the father did, and they were wrong. But you can imagine how much he knew. As far as Reb Moshe Katz was concerned, when he kept his yahrzeit, why did he keep his yahrzeit? Each year, the soul goes higher. Kept his yahrzeit. Each year he knew the soul goes higher. He brought him into the world. Material things, what has he got afterwards? He hasn't got anything. Material things better not to have than to have unless a person with his material things has done great things, that's a different thing. That is a different thing. Then it's the spiritual side of it again. Then it's the spiritual side of it again. And a person like that, possibly this wouldn't mean so much to him. He lost it. It wouldn't mean so much. It's lost. For that you've got to know. But now I've got to tell you something about Hillel HaZaken. Yes, a strange thing. According to the Din, HaZaken Ve'ena Lefi Kaveinu, even if a man, it's not in accordance with his dignity, let us say, this is the example that the Gemara gives, go into the street, and there's a cow, and I see the cow is lost. I have a look at the cow, I say, I've seen that cow before. This is Charles's cow. The law is, I've got to return it. Now, I can't walk right down Ocean Avenue with the Charles's cow. I don't have to do it. It's not in accordance with my dignity, my stage, with my position.
I can point to Shalia, like Marita Towing.
Anything I can tell you that your cow is there, but I haven't got that up yet. So what's the skillet? According to the Rosh, not only haven't I got the obligation, but even if I want to do it, I'm not permitted to do it because it's a Bechus Kovod HaTorah. That's not the Kovod HaTorah. I'm not allowed to do it, even if I want to. I say, I'll forgo my chance. So nice. I'll do it for chance. I'm not allowed to do it. So how does he will do it? There's only, can only be one reason.
Very, very crazy person.
No.
There is something, there's some
other element of Torah. There's something else here. Why, how does this person allow him to do it? How does he allow him to do it? How does he allow him to do it? However great he is, the greater the person, the less he can. So he can't be a great person.
What's this coming to do with his chatan?
No. There's only one case in which, for one case, everything is permitted. For what is that?
Royalty?
No. For one thing, anything is permitted.
Saving life.
Saving life. So it must be a question of saving life. I want to tell you something. Have you ever heard of Yerovam ben Nevot? Never heard of Yerovam ben Nevot. You've heard of him. Yerovam ben Nevot was the person who established the northern kingdom. So there was the southern kingdom, there was the northern kingdom.
Right after Shlomo.
Are we pardon?
After Shlomo.
After Shlomo Melech's death.
Right.
Yes, after his death. He established the northern kingdom. The first Sukkot, when he came to Shul, there was nobody in Shul. He said, where are they all? Shulai. Sukkot, everybody goes to Yerushalayim. He said, to Yerushalayim. So it means my state is a second-rate state. I am a second-class king. Sukkot and everybody goes to Yerushalayim. I'll build my own. You've got to have Kohen. I'll have my own Kohenim. I'll have my own gods. And there it all started. He made his own religion. But Yerovam ben Nevot was a great man. What made him do it? He was a great man. You believe. Hashem appointed him that he was to be the first king of the northern kingdom. He was to establish the northern kingdom. So he couldn't have been an ordinary person. Hashem appointed him.
Subject to extraordinarily twisted thinking.
Some sort of pressure?
What was the pressure? Why did he do a thing like that?
For the Malkus.
Are you pardon?
For the Malkus.
He's meant to set up, according to set up idols. Tell you another story. And of course it went from bad to worse. And he introduced idolatry, Avodah Zorah, into the northern kingdom, which in the end was the downfall of the northern kingdom. Was the downfall. Tell you something else. The Gemara tells us the following story. But please remember that this man, he was a very, very great man, you know. Great Talmid Chacham. We've got to find out what was it that led him astray. What was it? The Gemara tells us that the Rebbeinu Shleilom came to Yerovam ben Nevot and said, Yerovam, do tshuva. And you and Ben Dovid, who's Ben Dovid? And Ben Yishai, the son of Isha, that's Dovid HaMelech, and I will walk together in Gan Eden. All you've got to do is to repent. So Jeroboam ben Nebat said, me first. Who walks first? Who walks first?
Who cares?
So Hashem says, David. He says, if that's the case, Efshia, I don't want it. Now, what is it then? What is there in your own life? What is it?
If he was really that great, then he was appointed directly. How is Jeroboam appointed again?
Are we put Jeroboam by Achio Ashiloni, by the prophet. Achio Ashiloni appointed him.
Okay.
Hashem said to Achio Ashiloni, you've got to appoint Jeroboam and Nebat as the king.
Okay, I was going to say that
what is wrong? If a person can say, me Barosh, who goes first? Hashem says, Ben Ishai goes first. Efshai, I don't want it. Then I don't want it. So what is it? What is it?
That he's not
perfect. Yeah, Das is upset.
What's that?
It's like Das Ruach.
What's that?
Private.
Covet. Yeah. This is covet. Continent. A covet of it. What covet is, you don't know what covet means. How it can be the undoing of a person. Covet. I'll never forget, I was at a dinner in Johannesburg given in honor of a person who had given a sum of money for Jewish education. Cecil Roth was there. Cecil Roth put an aeroplane at Cecil Roth's disposal, traveled different parts of the country, and now there was a dinner for him and his wife. And at this dinner, his wife was presented with a silver tray, and the dinner was in honor of him. I was sitting here, he was sitting across there. I see during the dinner, he isn't eating anything. So, in between the courses, I thought, has to be courteous. I went across to him. I said, Mr. Bill, why aren't you eating here? He said, I'm not allowed. All I can have is water. Not that. I said, Mr. Bill, I'm terribly, terribly sorry. He said, we don't have to be. This is my greatest day. This is the biggest hotel in Johannesburg, 500 guests. He said, this is my greatest day. What does he get? Why should it be his greatest day? Nothing goes into his tummy. Nothing goes into his pocket. Only goes out of his pocket. Why is it his greatest day?
You understand. Comfort is one of the things that a person even needs. You need it to learn.
Covet. This is what covet is. The Sforim HaKadoshim say that if you want to know what pleasure is on the Olam HaEmes, what ta'an or what pleasure is on the Olam HaEmes, being on the Olam HaEmes, what pleasure is, Hashem has given us covet. Covet is ruchnius. Covet isn't material. Nothing in your tummy. Nothing in your pocket. You pay for it. It goes out of your pocket. But the covet of it. The covet of it. What it means to the individual. The only way I can think of explaining this piece of Gemara is, and this is the way that Chaim Shmulevich explains it, that to this person, covet meant so much that if he hadn't, then how he can't manage without it. He can't live without it. He can't live without it. When he was wealthy, it was easy. Now he's lost his wealth and he hasn't got COVID. You know what it means? That he hasn't got money, that's not the thing that hurts him. What hurts him is the humiliation of it all. That he hasn't got any COVID. This is a person that everybody, when he went past the street, stopped and took off their hats to him. And now when he comes across the street, they don't even know, don't even notice him. This is a person. It's a question of pikuach nefesh with him. That's the only reason that he does it.
But you've got a big problem with the
whole what?
The whole idea of COVID,
yes,
is my understanding. While COVID, to an extent, is necessary, it's got to be kvod debris, and you're supposed to expect a certain amount of COVID to be kvod.
Yes.
On the other hand, it's not supposed to be something you're supposed to pursue. On the contrary, you're supposed to, you should run away from COVID and all that.
Yes.
And to say that, the whole idea of Pesach, I just finished it, is Saor. Saor
yes.
represents
yes.
the idea of pride.
Yes.
And
yes.
I was thinking as Mi Barosh,
yes.
Saor backwards is Rosh, and there's that connection over there. But to think that is something we have to rid ourselves of.
So, yes.
And then to say that just because a person has lost it, he can't live anymore, and
yes.
therefore you have to go out of your way to provide that for that person, it just doesn't seem to...
That there isn't, there's some things that if a person wants, and if he can't get it, he's going to die, some things that he's got to die.
But then why would somebody... take another step. Somebody says, well, I can't live anymore unless I, let's take it to a real extreme, okay? A person was a heroin addict.
Yes.
No more heroin in the land. The authorities have stopped all this heroin from coming in. He says, unless I get the heroin, I'm going to die.
Yes.
Would a great person, like Hillel, would it be necessary for a person to go out of their way to supply this person with it because they were going to die without it?
You're welcome.
Yes, you see, there's another thing here. You always bring in things that I've got to bring new things in. The thing is about tzedakah. If a person is a mumma, I don't have to give him tzedakah.
A mumma
is a person who doesn't keep the Torah, but that is his way already not to keep it. But even I don't have to give him tzedakah. That I don't have to do. But if you were speaking about a person who is a very fine person, a good person, and somebody put heroin into his soup or something, and he became an addict to it,
mm-hmm.
through no fault of his own, and he's an addict, and of course I've got to give it to him. I've got to do everything I can to give it to him, to save life. If that's the way I can save life, I've got to do it.
Okay.
I want to tell you there's something that it distresses me, but I have to accept it. There's going to be a lot of trouble in a few weeks' time in Israel. When America is going to turn on the screws and say, give back the West Bank. Give them a new country or something. I'm distressed that the Sinai is given back. Reb Lazer Shach said that if it's a question of saving Jewish lives, give it back. That's the deal. I would never question Reb Lazer Shach. So you give back. If it's a question of saving life, to give back. If we can save life by it, if it means that if we don't give back, we're going to lose men in a war, and by giving back, we won't lose men in a war, then the law is that you've got to give back. Good message.
That people will make the contrary argument.
Well,
that by giving it back, you're putting yourself in a bigger sakana.
Lazer Shach says that he knows what he's speaking about. And he says it, but that's the first thing. You don't give it back, you've got to pay with lives immediately. That doesn't. You keep the West Bank because of that, that not. We don't have to do that. That is what Lazer Shach said. I mean, I didn't believe it until I saw it. But if Lazer Shach says it, I don't question it.
Who is
Rebbeinu Shach is today one of the great men.
Ponovich.
in Bnei Brak. Bnei Zeshav says that. Bnei Zeshav says that you can't take less, so you can't just even get it. You follow? But I'm just saying, you're giving you of what Pikuach Nefesh is, what saving is. That is what Reb Chaim Shmulevitch says about this piece of Gemara. The only way you can explain it is, there's only one reason for that you do a thing like that, and that is because Pikuach Nefesh. Often it's happened in our lives that something had to be done. Couldn't find a person in the community to do it. So what do you think we did? What do you think we did?
Did it yourself?
Ourselves.
Yes.
We just did it ourselves. I mean, once a child had a stepfather, and the stepfather was just too awful for him. Just too awkward, and he loses his mother. Boy of 7 is out on the street. My wife and I decided we would take him. We had a neighbor across the road, a most remarkable person, and he came across to us and he said, I am taking him. I knew you want to take him. He said, I am taking him. I said, why are you taking him? He said, first of all, I can afford him. Secondly, he's in the same class as my son. I'd have a companion for my woman. He said, this suits me perfectly. He said, I take him. I said, what does your wife say? He said, my wife is more insistent than I am. This boy comes and plays with our children. We love him. I'm taking him. He took the child. He's put the child into his business, a flourishing business. Child is in the business, plays a very important part in the business. Treats him exactly the same as his own children. And he came across to me once, he said, you never have to worry about this. He's treated in my will, he's treated exactly the same as my children. All right, but if he wouldn't have done it, we'd have done it myself. That happens very often in life. You ask a person, God, he's busy, I must do it. Do it yourself. That I can understand very well. That was over and over again. Follow?
Yes.
So that's all it is. But that is the way that comes from them to say, work it backwards. You work it backwards. This is against the deal. If a person like Hillel is not allowed to do this on the covenant of the Torah, there can only be one case in which he can do it, and that is if it's a pikuach nefesh. But now you can see what covet is. Covet is something that a person can't live without it, like your heroin. Can't live without it. Can't live without it. You don't know what covet is. Don't forget that you are living in a society where you've gone to the opposite extreme. You've gone to the opposite extreme. It doesn't mean anything. Try to denigrate it completely. Isn't that so?
Absolutely. Without question.
You try to.
Everybody's equal. Everybody's the same.
Yes, but you try to, see, which is a... when I first came to San Jose, they wanted to introduce that all Aliyahs are the same. Kohen, Levi, and then anybody. Well, I stopped it immediately. Well, can't do that. People are not the same, you don't treat them the same. That is the, as far as this is concerned. That is the way Reb Chaim Shmulevitch explains it. The only way you can deal with it. But I want you to see how he reasons it out. He's not allowed to do this here. According to the deen, he's not allowed. And he doesn't. So what is there that one is not allowed to do the deen, and yet you've got to do it? What kind of assessment? There can only be one. Pikuach nefesh. Otherwise, the person will die. But now you can see what COVID is. That COVID can be something that a person can die from. That is to where it goes, how far it goes. The Gemara and the Rambam is another case. A man wants to have an association with a woman. Must have it. And the woman's a married woman. Must have it. Otherwise, he dies.
He
dies. The death of the that he dies, you're not surprised at
that. Make it a little easier, an unmarried woman.
So, but what I'm saying is the Gemara says that that is possible. That it is possible.
Yeah.
It's possible for a man to have that extent, so much passion, that he, if not, he doesn't get it, he dies. That's possible. Mm. Well, I can't imagine a thing like that. We always used to tell our friends who were madly in love, and the girl didn't want him. We always used to say, we had a way of dealing with it. What was the way of dealing with it? In those days, we didn't have motor cars. We always used to wait for the bus. What do you do if you miss a bus? What do you do if a bus is full and it falls
in
the
That's
the next one. That's the way we used to deal with it. Take the next one. Where does it come to there? See? And it used to have very good effects. It used to work. It used to work, you see. Yes?
I'm curious on David's question also. Does it work the same way if the woman is not married?
If he's not married, then marry her. Marry her.
What if she doesn't want to marry you?
She's also got a right. Then court her. Then give her presents. Promise her things. You give me way.
Some things you give and some things you promise.
Work
for me.
But all I wanted to show you is the Gemara says I can't imagine a case like that. I say, my attitude is it'll be another woman. Yeah, that's my attitude, you see. But the Gemara says that is possible. That a man can be so passionately involved with a woman that if not, he dies. It's possible, says the according to the Gemara. So this is possible, what COVID is. You've got
There's cases all the time of people committing suicide.
I was thinking of that. I mean, but you've got no idea. You see, you don't see these things as COVID today. What a person will do for COVID.
See some of it. The problem I have is that we're basically saying that it is correct for this particular person to really need the COVID that much where he would die from it, where it comes down to
becoming. No, we don't say it's correct for him. We say it's incorrect for him. But what can I do?
But then you're talking, then isn't that a mumar then? Somebody was going against what the Torah really says, and in which case, why do you have to accommodate
this them? Otherwise he's going to die.
That's the problem I had. I've got a problem with that.
I know what you mean, too. Yes, I know what you're saying.
You know, I mean, here this man doesn't think properly. Therefore, you know, help him think right. You know,
right. Why should we accommodate him is the question.
You see, we look upon this the same as a bodily flaw. He's got an illness from which he's dying. And we look upon this as the same thing. He's got an illness.
Get him help.
So it's medicine. So
get him up
to
the doctor.
So he'll collect
the charge. You've got to know what it means, what a person won't only do for a little bit of cover. You know, the cases come to my mind, man is no longer alive. He had everything that the heart could possibly desire. Once, names were mentioned, his name was omitted. Well, I mean, it was the end of the world. His name was omitted. And the funny thing was that other names were mentioned and a far more important person was a woman who had really got a whole thing going. Her name wasn't mentioned. He did very little. His name was mentioned. He didn't think that this woman's name wasn't mentioned. Didn't even enter his mind. A few months later, There's a caterer. His name is mentioned. You know, you don't know what went on. That his name wasn't mentioned. Terrible thing. In public, his name wasn't mentioned. Nice family. Very nice family. His name wasn't mentioned.
How do you handle that?
I beg your pardon?
How do you handle
it? I handled it only by reminding him. And he didn't say anything else. I said, this woman's husband spoke to you and told you that his wife's name wasn't mentioned. You didn't even think of it. You didn't do it. That's all I could tell him. But you've got no idea what went on. His wife was unhappy, and his children were unhappy. The end of the world. What COVID is. This is what COVID can do to a person. And that is if Chaim Shmulevich's explanation for that.
Sir, what did you do first?
Yes, sir, but let me just ask a hypothetical question. Let's say you have a situation where a person will have a reaction similar to this person you're mentioning if they don't get the Aliyah for Chosen Bereishu.
Yes.
And there are people that are more qualified to get Chosen Bereishu.
You know.
What do you do? Mm-hmm. I mean, in a situation like that, do you have to give the person who's going to charge?
Is it the squeaky wheel or is it the most deserving?
No. You see, there are lots of things that you've got to take into consideration. Some of the things you've got to take into consideration is you teach people. And you teach people like that. You say, explain to people, yeah, we'd like to give it to you, but there is a person who is more deserving of an inheritance. But yeah, I had a case in my congregation, a Russian immigrant. He wanted mufti, because he had yotzai. Anyway, I didn't know anything about this, but he spoke to the gubber, and the gubber said, okay, I'll give him yotzai. So they called him up shishi. And when they called him up shishi, he said, I won't take it, and he walked out of shul. I just quietly went up and I took the clear. It wasn't a word. I just took the clear. As if I gave the impression that I was called up and I took the clear. Another word. Mm-hmm. Now we are dependent on people. This is the first time it's happened that we have 12 days a minyan, 12 consecutive days, morning, afternoon, and evening. Shachris, Minch, and Mardi. For 12 days, of course, there was Yom Tov between Shabbos, but for 12 consecutive days. This is the first time it's happened to us. So we depend on people. They said, what are we going to do with him? I said, you do absolutely nothing. They said, you know what he's done? Probably he's gone along to that other congregation, conservative tradition. Let him go. Let him go. But that you You just leave him severely alone. As he can't be explained to you, that's nothing at all. Don't go and ask him to come to a minyan, nothing at all. Next day he was the first person in shul in the morning service. Thought better of it. Would have run after him. Would have been bad. He had to be taught. It was such a sobering lesson for him. I had some money for him. How was it difficult? Send it. It was earmarked for him. I had to give it to him. I didn't want him to think that it was because of this. I didn't want him to think that this was Shabbos, you see. I decided I'll wait. Sunday morning he was there. Waited a few days and then I sent it to him. He sent it back. Not because he was, he said, I didn't know the government gives him money. And he told him for each member of his family, the government gives him money. He sent it back to him. So he's a decent person. Sometimes you've got to, everything, this belongs to the fifth part of the Shulchan Aruch. I had to deal with these things. We take everything into consideration. I want to explain something else to you. Today, and can you imagine today a person like Pinchas? Let us say there is a chazan in a shul, a woman who is a chazan in a shul, and she's living with a member of the synagogue who is married to another woman, and she's married to another man, and they're living together. Can you imagine anybody in that congregation getting up and killing the woman, Hs ish what she's doing, for no other reason? Nothing. That such a wrong is done. That's what Pinchas did. Can you imagine anybody doing it?
Imagine it, I cannot.
For different reasons. But for doing it only because it's against the deen.
We're not people.
So you haven't, and this is a thing, this is kainos. And this is, kainos is that it's from the word kinyon. Belongs to me. But I've got the same feeling if it belongs to somebody else. And I see somebody taking it away from that person, it's the same as if he takes it away from me. The deen of Kornos is, if Pinchas would have come and asked the deen, am I allowed to kill him? The answer is no. Because once you ask, then you're not doing it out. It's such a wrong that you can't contain yourself. Once you ask, you're not allowed to. Then the answer is no. Now, have we got people like that today?
No.
There are not people who would kill this woman for quite different reasons.
Yes, boys.
It's a different thing. Today, things don't on not as deep as old days. Even COVID is deep as old days. People haven't got these things yesterday. Haven't got it.
I just can't say blanketly no. I have a feeling that, well, maybe the majority of people wouldn't do that. There probably are still some that would.
Would do what?
Would kill her for that reason.
No, never. He might say he killed her for that reason. He might even think he killed her for that reason. But we know it wasn't for that reason. May it be the reason because he couldn't do it himself. Very often the reason. But we know that it's not for that reason. Impossible today. You won't fight anybody. Absolutely pure.
It's the same reason why we don't allow you.
Same reason, exactly. Same reason we don't allow even you.
What is that? You know this, what, elaborate?
Yes, that if a man dies without issue, that is... we give
elaborate.
You know, I was just this morning, I was looking at a Rashba, where the Rashba says something along the Dol Hazeh Shenizdal Delu the Ein Ashirus Bekis Velobedeos. In these days where there's been so much retrogression that there's no longer any riches in the pockets of the people, nor in the minds.
No what?
In the minds. The lobedeos, and not in the minds. In his day, really.
When was this?
The 14th century. 13th century. End of the 13th century, beginning of the 14th century, round about the 1300, that in our days, when there is no more riches, Jews were going through a hard time, there is no more any substance in the pockets of people, nor in the minds, riches are Jews. Makes a statement, the Rashba makes a statement. I saw it in the Beis Yosef only this morning. Before the davening, I was doing some learning. I came across it in the Beis Yosef.
Rabbi?
Yes,
if just if you were to just hypothetically say that the situation did arise where someone did kill her out of purely the correct motive,
yes.
How would you ever know if it was correct or not?
You know,
I mean, you're just blanketly saying that it isn't correct, that even if he thought it was correct, that it isn't correct.
It just can't be today, because one knows the people, you see. One knows the people today, it just can't be.
But you know the people as a whole, you don't know every single individual.
We know what level people are today. Know what level of people are today. We know that if a person gets terribly excited, well, this man is living with somebody else's wife. If he gets too excited, we know what's worrying him. And he can't do it. And that's people today, you see. No. If you don't believe me, ask Freud.
If someone like, say, Moshe Feinstein were to kill her,
he'd never do it, because he would understand. He'd be the last person.
If someone told us today that he spoke to Hashem, would we know if they're an Avi or not? We know they're not. Of course we know they're not.
Okay, then, I guess, maybe you want to repeat it, but okay. I guess I'm carrying it to an extreme. How are you ever going to know if the Mashiach is really the Mashiach, then?
You won't have any doubts. But when you know the real thing, you've got no doubts.
When he's here, I'll tell you.
Yes.
If you say, hello, hello. Michael, I didn't speak to you before Pesach, but when I wanted to speak to you, I heard you'd already gone to that funny place.
Coronado.
Suburb of Coronado. Yes, yeah.
Coronado.
Yes, I can never pronounce it.
Oh, good.
Right. So, Kieran. You follow, it's over here.
There's a question.
In Eretz Israel, they throw stones because people can't be on Shabbos.
I didn't hear that.
They throw stones, people tell them to throw stones.
That occurred to me.
No God will be Israel, but says that's a God. But they just can't. That's not
true. Then what is their real reason for throwing the stones?
No, you want to get something off your chest. Have you ever heard of a person shouting at another person? Or was he? Was he shouting? Was he shouting?
He doesn't have enough self-control?
Of course. So it's because of himself, not because of that person. Because of himself he's doing that. Person doesn't agree with him, he shouts at him. So he doesn't agree with you. But these are things are done for quite different reasons. They're not done for pure reasons. And was it Mark that you spoke about evil? Did you mention the evil? And that's the best example of it all. If a person today says, I want to marry my sister-in-law. You say, but you can't. He says, why not? He says, because not pure. You see, with me it's pure. Then I know immediately that he's the wrong person to do it.
And if he says it's because it's not for pure reasons?
Then it certainly can't be. Before I left Johannesburg, on my way to what proved to be America eventually, I went into a business in Johannesburg and I wanted to buy a good coat, which I still have. So I got exactly the coat with the one. I said, has it got the Chinese outgoing? He said, oh, this business over the case, he said, I don't know about it. He said, but there's a telephone phone down to Cape Town. and ask them about shakyamuni. I said, all right. I picked up the telephone. Excuse me, phone through to Cape Town. I say, may I speak to the owner of this business? I said, who is the owner? Mr. Shill or something. I speak to him. They put me through to him. I say, is that Mr. Shill? He said, oh, good morning, Rabbi Lavin. Where are you speaking from? I said, look here, are you the owner of this business? Yes. He said, yes. I said, I know you. I live in Cape Town. I know you. He said, what's the problem? I said, I bought a Coke. It's your manufacturer. I'm worried about whether it's got linen and flax. He said, you mean chutneys? I said, yes, chutneys. He said, I guaranteed 100% no chutneys there. I know, you know what it is? No chutneys. Take the Coke. Give him. He says, do you want to put it on? I said, no, I don't want to put it on. Put it on. I took it straight away to a target of mine who specialized on chutneys. I said, Joseph, please go carefully through the script. Together with me was Isaac Mendler, a very great friend of mine, lawyer James. So Isaac Mendler said to me, let's go. You've just heard me guarantee 100%. One word. I said, once he said it's 100%, I know that it's got chutneys. He said, but that healthiness. Said exactly the same. As if he says 100% it, I know it's got chutneys.
Okay, that means that there's some codes that are 98%?
I know it's got chutneys. Well, I got a call the next day from Joseph Crosby. He said, yeah, I've taken out as much as I can. But I can't finish the job before you go. There's still some left. I've put a note in it into the pocket. You take it to London, you'll be in London, take it to this place. I gave it to this place, and anyway, I had to get across to the continent. I came back 2 weeks later. He phones me, he said, you know, I've got your coat. I said, good, I'll send for it. He said, now, I want to speak to you, I'm coming over. He said, who put that note in the pocket? Did you do it? I said, no, I didn't know it. He said, you know, I would never have looked there. This is the first time in my experience that there, in that particular spot, should be shut. How did he know to look there? This is 100%. As soon as the person tells me his home is 100% kosher, I know I can't eat there. Because Mamonavshah. If he knows what kashrus is, he'd never say it's 100% kashrus. So either he doesn't know what kashrus is, or he does know what kashrus is and he's telling a lie. He's saying, in any case, I can't eat there. Once he tells me it's 100% kosher, I know I can't eat there. He doesn't know what it is. But you know you're dealing with, you see. Those are the people that you deal with today. This is something that you've got to understand. It'll make it a little bit easier for you to understand. Freud worked on this sort of thing. All along the line. What is the real thing that motivates a person? I mean, you were living in the time of the mind. Otherwise, what motivation? That's all it is. All right. Yes.
I have a question.
Yes.
You know, it's a little out of this
yes.
character, but I understand there had been a member of your own family who spoke to Eliyahu Hanavi.
Yes, now you mentioned this to me, and I said I would speak to it, but on one condition. And that is that you don't speak about it, not to anybody. Then I'm prepared to speak to you about it. If that's, I mean, is that understood? Otherwise, I can't speak to you about it. This must have been about... What is it now, 1980, 60? this must have been about the middle of 1960s. I was in England, and from England I was going over to Israel and coming back to England again. And a cousin of mine asked me whether I ever heard my uncle say that he knew a young man who had Kilui Eliyahu. That means to whom Eliyahu worked. I said, no, I never heard him say that. I said, but that's no proof that he didn't say it. Because a thing like that, in those years when I was very much with my uncle, could have passed me by. So my cousin said he had heard my uncle say that. That's his son. He said he heard my uncle say that. I said, why do you ask this now? He said, because somebody told him that in Kelham, my aunt was very ill and she was dying. And my uncle had a house full of little children and he didn't know what to do. And there was a knock at the door. The man came in and said to him, go down to there was a rivulet, I know exactly where it was, Kelham, and there you will see a certain plant growing there. Take that. Take the leaves of that plant, bring it home, boil it up, and then give it to the sick woman to drink. Which he did, and she recovered. So I said to my cousin, there are two things that are absolutely wrong here. First of all, that if you've spoken about it, he would never have spoken about it. And the second thing is that it should be about it. He would never have believed that Eliyahu came to him. Can't be like that. So my cousin said, now you're going to Israel. Reb Dovid Mishkovsky is the person that told me about it. He said, I got the story it came from Dovid Mishkovsky. Not that he told it, somebody told him. He said, you are going to Israel, you'll meet Dovid Mishkovsky. I said, of course. He said, then make a point of asking him the details of it. So I went across to Israel and then, sure enough, I went up to Kfar Hasidim to see the part of the family there, and Dovid Mishkovsky asks me to. I said, I was told by the play to ask you about the story of my uncle with Eliyahu. But I've got to have the details of the story. He said, yes. And he said, towards the house, and he said, your uncle was sitting there, you are sitting now. And I said to him, I heard that you as a young man had Kilui Eliyahu. Is it true or isn't it true? So he said there was a slight hesitation and my uncle said, yes, it is true.
This is when you were start telling me.
Yeah. So Reb Dovid said, I'm asking, what exactly happened? He said, well, I had it. But it wasn't because of myself. I had it, but not because of myself. He said, what happened? He told him the story that his wife was dreadfully ill. She was dying. The house was full of children. Didn't know what to do. And this person, there was a knock, and there was a man at the door. He just said, you go down, you take these glasses, you bring it home, you boil it, and you give it to her to drink. He said, what she did, and she recovered from it. He said, but it wasn't because of me. He said, it was because of her. She was a tzaddikah, she was a righteous woman. It was because of her, not because of me. David said, was there a hemshech to the story?
Hemshech is?
Hemshech, what is the hemshech? Continuation. Was it carry on?
Sequence.
Was there a sequence? That's the word. Was there a sequence to the story? Now, the sequence is much more important than the story, you see. He said, yes, there was a sequence to it. He said, what was the sequence? He said, a few years later, I was in Geir, and I went to see the Geir Rebbe. In those days, the Geir Rebbe was, that same time he went to the Kotitz Chaim, went to the Geir Rebbe. In those days, the Geir Rebbe was the Sfas Emes. Now, the Sfas Emes died in about 1904, so this must have been before 1904. This is 80 years ago already.
What's the Sfas Emes?
Sfas Emes was... He was the second or the third Geir Rebbe. He was a very great man.
The time
Sfas Emes was the safer Rebbe.
And the time when his wife was dying and recovered because of this man was about when?
So it must have been a couple of years before. I don't know. When was it? 4 years? I don't know. 5 years before? 6 years before? I don't know.
So we're dealing sometime around in the '60s, though.
Oh, early 1900s.
Oh, you heard the story in the '60s.
I heard the story in the '60s. Right. So he said he was at the Geir Rebbe, and before he left the Geir Rebbe, he asked the Geir Rebbe for a bracha. Geir Rebbe was a great, this Sfas Emes, he was great. Grandson of the Chidush Eorim, and my uncle was a specialist in the Chidush Eorim, in this man's grandfather. I can very well, I can see my uncle. Oh, and he was an old man, he died a year or two later, he died, you see. So he asked you for the question. So the Geir Rebbe said, a young man who has had Hilu Eliyahu doesn't need any bracha from me. So my uncle said, if that is the case, then I insist, and I won't go away until you give me a bracha. So he gave him a bracha. My uncle never spoke about that. This story came out from the house of the Geir Rebbe. This story went down to the Geir Rebbe's stories. That is how the story came out. And it came out from there to a man called Reblaine Friedman. And the great people told that my uncle never ever spoke about it. Only when he was pressed, then he said the story. So the story with the Geir Rebbe is much greater than the story with my uncle. Mm. So that is the greatness is the second part of the story, not the first part of the story. And I wouldn't have told you the story. But it's been put into print, but it's put into print exactly as it was. It's put into print very well. In print, it is exactly as it took place. It's correct as it is in print. But I don't want it spoken about.
That was the...
But he said, it's not because of me, it's because of her. It's because of Jesus' anchors, that's why it was. As I said, the second part of the story is far more important than the first part of the story. Yes.
I have only a vague idea of why it's so important to that we not speak to anyone about it. To not blast it about in a cheap way, that I understand, but not to speak to...
Doesn't speak about these things. Speak about these things. The other things that we speak about these things. We don't speak about our great men, about the wonders that they did. We never speak about that. We speak about their characters, yes. Their leaders, yes. But the wonderful things that they did, and the wonderful things that they, and the miracles, we never speak about that.
And the point would have to be, why did it have to be asked about in the first place, as opposed to not mentioning it to my wife.
I spoke about it here only because David Morrow had heard about it, and one or two others. It's in print now, so I've told you about it. I don't want to do it. We don't speak. You want to speak about my uncle? Speak about his manners. Speak about his character. Those are the things to speak about. I want to tell you this, that they started speaking about my uncle, that he gave a blessing to somebody, and somebody was ill, and the person recovered. As soon as my uncle heard about it, he stopped giving any brachas. Stopped immediately. And for years he didn't give any bracha. Wouldn't give anybody any bracha. As soon as they start saying it, he gives a bracha, the person gets killed, and it's a miracle. He stopped it immediately. We don't do that sort of thing. That's not the way of the Torah. Our great men are great because of their knowledge and learning, and because of the way they live according to that knowledge. That is their greatness. Not miracles. Don't like this business. The way it's so. Did you ever hear me telling you about the miracles of the earth? I was speaking about that. The characters that it's, the way these people behave, that is important. And then it starts immediately. The only thing is here are the miracles. It's not the way of the character. You follow. You don't speak about I've told you about it, so you can know about it. That's all. If anybody tells you the story, you're in a position that you've heard it from a reliable source, and you can correct it. After, when I knew the story already, Ignatia Tikhachinsky was in our home, so he came down in South Africa, he stayed with us, and he said, you know, I heard this story about your uncle. Have you ever heard about it? This is good. I said, yes. I said, what is the story you heard? So he told me the story, but he told me the way I did it the first time. So I said, I can tell you that it's not true. He said, what isn't true? I said, first of all, my uncle would never have spoken about it. He told me that he would never have spoken about it. And secondly, even if it was told to him, he would never have ascribed it to himself. I knew my uncle really well. And he thought, he said, you know, it's funny. Unconsciously, I felt that was wrong with it. So I said, I'll tell you the story. I told him the story as I've told it to you. He said, that's fine. That is fine. You, my uncle, too. He said, but Rabbi Abramsky told me the story is this. He said, as soon as I get back to Israel, I'm going to tell Rabbi Abramsky what the correct story is. But he would never have. I mean, not that he wouldn't have said it about himself. He couldn't have ascribed it to himself. He just couldn't. He didn't believe that it was for himself. He believed that it was for my aunt. She was a sedatist. It was for her. She needed it. That's all. It wasn't because of him. And he believed that with his own heart and soul. You could hear me. That is the character of the person.
Well, we know it was for his wife and not for himself.
Well, maybe that, and maybe it was for him, who knows? But he would never, he was quite certain it wasn't for him. That is greatness.
He was quite young at that time.
He was very young. I mean, he was, mainly, he was a self-made man as far as learning is concerned. It was only when he was about 18 that for the first time he came into touch, 17, 18, for the first time he came into touch with Sufism and that, but the otherwise he didn't have the direct, he got it only afterwards, that he is really under that influence. But to the extent that at the age of 18, Reb Simcha Zissel said about him, this is a complete person. You see, you've got to understand, there is a deen. There is a deen. And the Bistro Salanti used to say this. There is a deen on Shabbos, let us say, or on any day. You've got two loaves of bread on the table. Both are holy lamps, a bigger loaf and a smaller loaf. You make the bracha on this, of the bigger loaf.
Take the book on the
Bible. Any time when
Charles?